Well, the other golden era, I guess this one kind of bridges both OEM and modified. The other one that I think will ruffle some feathers is now. The era we are in now. I know there's a lot of issues that we can see every single day, but if you think about it, the accessibility to so many different types of cars.
You're talking about aftermarket car culture right now?
Aftermarket car culture or just OEMs.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Welcome to Substance Podcast. I'm your host, Liam.
And I'm your other host, Matt.
And I am your other host, Benny.
Benny.
Benny. Is that even my title? Because we were talking about being producer. Am I just other...
Today, you're on the episode.
I'm the other host today.
Yeah. Ben's on it.
They aren't paying me.
They're not paying me. Shit, I don't know what... They're not paying me either.
Yeah, that's true.
Who's they?
Will y'all start paying us, please?
The man.
Who's they? If you guys are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you won't know this, but watching on YouTube,
this is a special edition episode.
We're in our living room after the last episode, and actually the past few episodes, it's been unbearably hot in the garage, and the camera keeps overheating, and it's not fun.
You're unbearably hot in the garage.
Yo, we're going to have to end this episode now. Ooh, chill.
I know. Turn the fan up higher, baby.
But yeah, we decided to bring this into the living room and kind of see how this goes. This was a headache to set up, but everything is together and hopefully we sound and look hot in Delicious. The living room. Mm-hmm. It's also Father's Day today, so shout out to all the hot dads out there, including us three. We all look pretty good on this fucking couch.
Specifically, shout out to all the hoochie daddies.
Yeah, I wore some some real short shorts yesterday for the first time in my life. I ain't gonna lie, I was feeling it.
Hey,
I was feeling something,
yeah, because it was short shorts.
You know what I wasn't feeling was when I sat in the car on black leather and the back of my thigh was actually exposed to it. That shit was miserable. That's the only downside I've found so far. That and my underwear, it sometimes is longer than the shorts.
But couldn't be me. I wear cargo shorts risking being a social pariah.
Me and Matt dress the same every day on accident.
Literally on accident.
We went to the market this morning and we were halfway walking around before we realized, yo, we look like the same fucking person today.
The Chattanooga market, by the way. You just sounded really, really English when you said that.
We went down to the market.
I have to specify
what city it's in.
Well, no, but
doesn't have a market.
No, when not you're really.
You're talking about the grocery store. You call it the store.
Yeah,
I'm going to the store. You know, like, I'm going to the market.
Yeah, it'd be the same thing in England. I say I'd be going to the store. I wouldn't say I'm going to the market. No, the market is the same thing it is here.
But it's a special market, and we're proud of it.
It is special market. Liam.
It's a special market. It's like a farmer's market.
It shares a venue with Riverside.
Yes,
very special, Liam.
Y'all are like degrading me like I said what it...
Aren't you into that?
I just hit y'all with rip headphones.
It's literally called the market. Anyways, went to the market and walked around. Matt got some honey for his allergies and we realized that we looked the same and ran into our buddy Hip and got some coffee and that was that. It was great. Then we got some burgers afterwards and talked about social reform, and we won't talk about any of that on this episode.
Yeah, it's not a topic for a car podcast. But.
This is a car podcast. But we are going to talk about some cool stuff that we're pretty excited to get into because we all have differing perspectives on it. We'll get into that in a second. But what is new? Me and Matt kind of fill you guys in every week. Ben, you've been away for the past couple of weeks, so you should probably like fill everyone in as to what you've been up to.
Well, for the past couple of weeks until this past Tuesday, it's Sunday when we're recording. On Tuesday, I got back from like 2 weeks in Italy and it was incredible. I've never been to, Italy before. I've never been to Europe before. I've only ever been to Mexico when I was like,
only time you've been out of the country is to Mexico.
Yeah. It was like 10 years ago. So to get out of the country again was really cool, specifically to a place that is so gorgeous, and like I just haven't been able to go go to a new place and take photos and stuff. So I did a lot of that, and that was cool.
That's the biggest thing I'm excited about is seeing, one, all of the film pictures that you shot, because I know you came back with like 8 to 10 fucking rolls of film that you need to get developed.
I dropped off 8 rolls.
Yeah. So. And also any pictures that you just shot on your camera. Like, I'm stoked to see any of it.
I like, when I got there, I was like primarily shooting only on digital. I took like quite a few hundred pictures on digital. And the reason for that was because I only had like a roll and a half of film left.
Oh, you ended up buying film out there.
Oh yeah. 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 No, that was like one of my first things was like, okay, can I buy film in Rome? And I didn't really look that hard, but I ended up buying film in Florence and got like, I think 3 rolls of Portra 400. Then I got another roll later on when we were in Siena.
Is it cheaper or more expensive to buy
film way out cheaper?
There? Really?
Way cheaper.
It's the same way in Mexico.
Yeah, it was way cheaper. It was really nice.
Interesting.
But yeah, it was cool. We flew into Rome and went to Florence by train. And I've never rode on a high-speed train before, so that was pretty cool. It went like 150 miles an hour through the Italian countryside, and that was just, I mean, it was just cool. Sit there for a couple hours, and then you're in a different city in Italy.
It's like being on a car ride or a plane ride, but you can like get up and walk around, and it's just like a visual thing that's happening next to you the whole time.
Significantly more efficient and better for the environment, but that's a whole topic we don't have to go down. you know, the lack of that in the U.S. But it was really cool to get into Florence, and then from there we went into like just this place in Tuscany. It's this very historic city called Loro Ciuffina, and we had a place there. It was me and my parents and my girlfriend Victoria. That was who all went on the trip, and so we just had this beautiful, like, it was almost like it was an old hostel or something, or like an old, I don't know,
Airbnb or bed and breakfast or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it was probably like a monastery back in the day or something. So it's really cool. Just beautiful everywhere. And I would like wake up at like 5 a.m. and go into town and get my cappuccino and a croissant. And it cost me like fucking $3 because it's not, you don't have to pay $11 like you do at Starbucks here.
Yeah.
You go into town to a little coffee shop, you get normal breakfast, and it costs like whatever you have in change, because that was another thing too that I had to get used to very quickly, is the fact that euros are like, there's $2 euros and $1
and
euros.
Coins,
and coins. So,
same thing in pounds in England,
because like when you're over here you get change and coins, you're like,
but you have your dollar bills,
and you're like, I gotta find somewhere to throw all these fucking coins. When you're over there, it's like, oh, you can just walk into a store and get something and be like, here's like 3 coins or 2 coins. And then they're out of your possession.
How much does this cost? 3 coins. Yes.
Then they're out of your possession. And it's like, oh, hell yeah. I don't have to carry around those coins anymore. So
talk about some of the cars you saw over there. You were texting back and forth in our group chat, like some of the just random finds you were seeing over there that were pretty cool. And I mean, one of them was something I'd never seen before. So.
Yeah, I hadn't either. Well, overall, I did not see as many like cool cars that I expected to see.
Yeah.
But the one that definitely stuck out to me was like the first day we got into Loro Ciuffina was, we went into town like to one of the markets and, just to get some groceries and stuff.
Get absolutely fucked.
We went to get groceries at the co-op or coop. I don't know how you say
it's
it.
A co-op. It's a co-op.
Yeah, but there's no dash. So it just looks like coupe.
I think it depends.
It wasn't CO and then OP under it, because that's how it is in England. No, the co-op is like a chain of like little mini grocery stores.
That's kind of what it was, but there was just COOP. I don't know. That's neither here nor there.
going down to the coupe.
We were driving around and there was this like tiny little yellow, very 80s looking hatchback. And I was like, I've never seen that before. And it had like a single piece taillight all across the back, and then it had turbo in that taillight, and I was like, oh, something cool. And so I made my parents turn and go look at it. I had no idea what it was, even looking at it.
You sent a picture of it, and I was like, that looks like a Fiat, but I don't see Fiat badges on it, which I found out afterwards that it is basically a Fiat, but I mean, explain what it was that you found out what it is.
So it's called a was it International De Tomaso? Something like
that. I think
so,
yeah.
It was a tiny little like three-door hatchback, less than 100 horsepower, tiny little wheels, but it was really cool. It had like a kit on it.
It's yellow.
It was like bright yellow, which was cool.
Did it have bucket seats in it?
Yeah. Yeah, it had bucket seats.
Momo steering wheel or something?
Yeah, Momo steering wheel, bucket seats with some harnesses. I forget the harness brand, but I mean, it was like cool little hot hatch. Like yeah. Would not be fast by any means, but the roads that were around Loro Chifena,
yeah,
I so wish I had a fun car, like just to like when I was bored. Well, it's tough to be bored when you're there, but like if I just had downtime and I was like, man, I want to go explore. If I had that car, I could just hop in and ride around in the mountains.
It's probably got all of 75 horsepower, but like you can use every single drop of that. Those roads.
Top speed of it. I ended up looking it up and getting all the specs of it. The top speed on it is like 97 miles an hour.
But that thing feels sketchy as fuck. You know, if the top speed of a car is 97 miles an hour, it's real sketchy to drive at that speed.
You get up to like 80 and you're like, I think I'm going to just let off the gas.
So I remember the full name now. It's an International Turbo De Tomaso. So De Tomaso made the Pantera, which is like an Americanized Lamborghini,
It's a Lamborghini like body style with a Ford engine in it, essentially.
So it's basically Fiat.
Did the De Tomaso have a Ford engine?
It was either Ford or a Lotus.
So a Ford V8 or something. Yeah.
So it's like Fiat bones, but with like a different kind of boxier hatchback body. But ultimately, it was really, really cool. Really cool to see. Really cool to like see a car that I have literally never known existed. And I'm just like, oh, it's right there. And then I can look it up and go down a rabbit hole. And like, I was telling my parents and Victoria all these random things I found out about it. And like, they don't give a shit.
I was gonna say, they're just like, that's like, cool, man.
Yeah, that's why it's good that you can text us back home. We're like, yo, that thing's fucking cool as shit.
I mean, I even told my mom, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm just like throwing these random facts out at you guys and stuff. She was like, no, it's just nice that you get so excited about it. And I was like, oh, that's sweet, at least.
It's always nice to see people passionate about stuff.
Yeah. And it was cool too. There were a couple of times, I wish I had gotten pictures or videos of it or something, but when we were in Rome the second time, because we ended up coming back to Rome for the last couple of days of the trip, we're walking around and I guess when we did like the golf cart tour as well, there was a like beautiful MG. I think I got a couple pictures of it on film though. I don't know how they'll turn out because I'm shooting on a like kind of not a very fast lens and I was in a car. So who knows how that turned out, but it was like probably a 50s or 60s MG that was really cool. Not a midget, but like, I don't know. I can't even explain it because I don't even know what it was. Something cool. Looks cool. The guy had driving gloves on and everything. I was like, hell yeah.
That has to be part of Italy. That if you do have an old car, you just kind of have driving gloves.
Yeah, I was really about to say, like,
leather, like for high-end cars is made in Italy anyway. It would just make sense that you have driving gloves.
But also like, that would be like the ultimate vibe. Driving anything from that era in Italy,
you don't
look like a chotch if you're wearing driving gloves. Like if you're, you know, if you're fucking driving in chat in some, you know, 60s, 70s car, but you have driving gloves on, people are like, all right, dude.
That's pretentious.
All right, dude.
But no, like, dude, if you're holding on to a fucking Naughty with some leather gloves on in Italy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
That's ticking some boxes.
The fucking vibe is just 100% there.
What kind of music would you be listening to? If you're cruising around in whatever car, but it just has a Naughty.
That's been in James Bond.
You know what I would be listening to? I would be listening to, I don't remember the name of the song, but the intro song to the original Italian Job movie where the guy is driving the Lamborghini Miura through the mountains. Yeah. If you guys have never seen the movie, then you won't know. But the song is like this intro scene has the credits rolling for a solid probably 5 minutes. And that's the song is all of it.
That's how movies were back then.
Yeah. And it's all just static shots of like the camera mounted at different points on the car as it's like driving and weaving through these mountain roads. And then as it gets to the end of the song, he's coming into this tunnel where the mafia literally just blows him up and pushes him dead in the car off the side of the mountain. That song that's playing in that intro sequence is the exact song I would love to listen to while driving just anywhere in Italy.
Yeah.
Because that's just such a quintessential part of my childhood experience with cars.
I can't handle my brain right now because all of my brain is thinking is just the meme value of.
I was gonna say I'd just be listening to fucking Hardstyle.
Oh my god,
Hardstyle.
Yeah, Hardstyle. Like at a, I couldn't even remember the car. No, harder than that.
That I can't do that.
No, I wouldn't be listening. I'd probably be listening to some like. Billy Holiday or something.
Hardstyle would make me want to drive off the cliff. I would save the mafia their job and just drive myself off the cliff.
You know what's interesting that I randomly found out the other day?
What?
Okay, take this with a grain of salt because I'm not sure it's true, but if it is, it makes it even better. Apparently that song, like the fucking meme Italian song, was like an actual like military fight song. For a division in the Italian military.
Hell yeah. I want to see a montage video to that maybe song of Italian military.
Maybe it was propaganda at some point that like another country fighting Italy, they were like, well, this song sounds silly, so we're going to say it sounds silly. And then everyone's like, yo, this song sounds silly. And now it's a meme.
Maybe.
Like, what if it was actually like, damn, this song's hard.
We'll show you guys. Watch this guy eat spaghetti with this music in the background.
They just took this one fight song and put it over normal, ordinary shit. Oh, he's reading the newspaper. Dun, 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 yeah, dun, exactly. Dun. Everyone's like, oh, that's kind of fucking lame, dude.
See, now I'm trying to think. What the fuck would I be listening to in that scenario? I had to move back. What would I be listening to in that scenario? I'm trying to think of like what, because I do listen to music from that time period, but admittedly, like most of it is like American.
Yeah.
Like blues or.
That's fine. It doesn't have to like be an Italian song. Just what fits that vibe?
If you're driving around one of those kind of cars in Italy playing fucking Creedence Clearwater Revival, it doesn't really go. You know what I mean?
I thought you were just going to say Creed.
That's literally what I thought you were about to fucking say. Driving around Italy in a sports car listening to fucking Creed.
Like just with your driving gloves, you do that thing. They do a movie
hand on your girl's thigh.
I literally picture the meme videos that has the really strong arm with the solid picture of the steering wheel and just the moving picture behind it.
You do that thing looking at the leather and you like squeeze your hand so you see it like flex and then in the background the whole time. So anyway, not Creed.
Not Creed. I don't, you know. My mom looked up.
That is a good question, though.
She looked up. It was very on the nose, but we were driving through the Italian countryside, and she looked up a playlist
for Italian countryside.
Yeah, she just looked up Italian countryside.
Italian countryside, and it was a great playlist.
I was gonna say, did it bang?
It was. Yeah, we were just driving through. It was on our way from Loro Trofana to Siena, which was like almost an hour drive, and it was just kind of like through back roads, which was really cool because most of the time driving around there, we were either on the train or like. The Autostradale, I don't know how to say it. The main highway.
Everything sounds so fucking good. Like any like words or phrases like that just sounds sick. And I think it's because we've been brought up seeing all this stuff from Ferrari and Lambo. You're like, oh, yeah. That's fancy.
Well, yeah. The other thing is
the Autostradale.
English is pretty ugly. Yeah, let's be honest. Like just as a language, English is pretty funny. Yeah. Even when you say like words, when you say things that are beautiful. The words are still ugly.
Yeah. Especially English. My English.
I was going to say maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just the really aggressive way that I say syllables. Maybe it's my English that's ugly.
I think it's everybody's. If you're not Italian, I think it's probably pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Italian language or Italy's just associated with things that are beautiful. Designer brands, fancy cars, wine, just beautiful things.
God, dude, the wine.
The wine.
I haven't gotten wine drunk in a long time, but man, it was like I was drinking Pinot Grigio out there. I don't like Pinot Grigio. When I drink wine here, it's got to be sweet. It's got to be Moscato and shit like that.
Sweet and come out of a box.
Yeah, my parents were like, "Yeah, let's get Chianti and Pinot Grigio, like red and white wines and stuff." And I'm like, "All right, I'll try it." And then I tried it, and it was phenomenal. And I'm like, "Damn, maybe I'm a wine guy now." But I can't afford that kind of wine, so it's all right. The wine out there was awesome. The food out there was awesome. Everything out there was...
Yeah, Ben had some real spaghetti and meatballs.
I had some real spaghetti meatballs, and it was fucking delicious. I got so much shit for that from my friends, but I don't care, because you can get spaghetti meatballs back here, and it's going to be a big old honking plate of it, but you get it there, and it's going to be a slightly less honking plate of it, but it's going to be so good, and it was. It was great. And then Cassio-y pee-pee.
What?
Cacio e pepe.
It's like, what?
It's like pepper and oil. It's just a very simple pasta recipe.
Pasta rest in peace.
Yes, pasta, pasta rip.
It was fun while it lasted.
No, but I always just, I love that phrase, cacio e pepe. But every single time I saw it on a menu, I'd be like, yeah, I'm getting cacio e pepe today. Just, I don't know. And every
time, get an order of the cacio e pepe, please?
Every time I would see a body of water, I'd say, oh, look, we're going in the River Derchi.
What stupid shit. River Derchi is that? That's goodbye, right?
I couldn't tell you. I didn't bother to learn the whole time. I was just making the joke.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But yeah, to summarize, your trip was great.
It was amazing. It was wonderful. I'll be posting many pictures over the next probably like 6 months. I took a lot of photos. I don't know. It was really cool. Definitely go to Italy if you can swing it. If you have cool parents who invite you along as well.
All right. Even just go other places. Go to other countries and experience different cultures. Because I'm going to say this. America doesn't have culture, but I've been saying this all weekend. Don't say America doesn't have culture, because we've been in the weirdest situations to where I'm like, yo, this is America. Like, for example, last night we got done enjoying a nice creek and hanging out in the river, and we went to a little like bar that is just down the street from the river. It's pretty busy. We walk in, waiting to get a table, and there is an Elvis impersonator that comes up, and I always like Elvis impersonator things for me is like, okay, like they do this as a show or whatever. No, this guy like lives this life. He was doing that shit for like, it was a whole performance for hours. And his girlfriend was like sitting at the table dressed up in the same way too. I'm like, oh, they really live that life.
They bout it.
And we were just so uncomfortable to be standing in the entranceway, basically right next to him, like with nowhere to go. And Matt's just like, this is so awkward. And I was like, don't say America doesn't have culture, because you're fucking looking at it.
The thing is, right, like, and I was saying this to them yesterday, I'm not going to say I never, like, cringe, but I'm not, like, one of those people that's just, like, has a hair trigger for, like, things making me cringe. Mm. But, like, yesterday, like, I was struggling. I don't know what it was. I don't know if I had some weird association in the back of my head that I can't verbalize that just was so weird about that guy to me. But like, between just how like not good his getup was and the fact that he low-key looked like Michael Jackson, like it was just, I don't know what it was. He just got up there and started doing his thing, and I was just like, ooh!
Did anyone else notice the fact that, I think what might have been throwing you off was how weirdly young he looked.
Yeah, like he that honestly is true also.
Very weirdly young, and Liam brought up his girlfriend.
She looked like she was in her 50s.
An older, man. She almost was like, 70. Yeah, late 60s.
Oh, even older than that?
Either that or she smoked a lot of cigarettes and she's 32 years old.
I mean, and it's like, hey, do your thing. But like yesterday, it was a lot. It was a lot of things.
See, that's where I'm different from you guys, because I'm just like, if that shit starts happening, I'm like, hell yeah, whatever.
Oh, me too. I was enjoying it, and that's why I made the culture joke, because I was like, this is why I'm like, I moved to America because. No, not just because
I moved to America to see this guy do an Elvis impersonation at River Drifters on the side of the river.
There's just so many weird and funky things about America that, like, you hear stories of coming from somewhere outside of America, and you're like, ah, there's no way it's really like that. And then you move here, and you're like, wow, this place is literally a cartoon.
Well, did you see his Mini Cooper in the parking lot?
I did not.
Did it have it
a Mini Cooper?
Elvis stickers all over it.
Oh,
no.
Oh my God.
Well, what if it wasn't his? What if there was a super Elvis fan there that was.
He's got one, like,
mega
fucking
fan.
Groupie. He's got one mega fan that follows
him. Yeah, it was her. It's her Mini Cooper. All right, anyway, let's move on
from like 3 minutes talking about the Elvis.
Let's get on to cars and
let's podcasting.
Let's podcasting. So I think this episode, this is a topic that Ben brought up that I actually think will be kind of fun to talk about. Because like I said at the start of the episode, we have different perspectives on it. And that's a big part of why we enjoy doing this show, is because any topics that we can talk about, we're able to, you know, have different perspectives from each other, but also have different perspectives from you guys. And it's just, it's a really cool dialogue, and we can kind of dive into different avenues of stuff. But I think what we want to talk about on this episode is the golden era of cars, and in, not saying in that our in respective fact,
opinions.
Exactly. We're, each of us, I think, has different ideas of what the golden era of cars is for them. So we kind of want to get into that and like break them down a little bit. I don't know where do you guys want to start with this? You want to just dive in? Do you want to just dive into one of them? And
yeah.
All right. Well, Ben, seeing as you brought up the topic, you go right ahead. You jump into.
All right. Well, I will go ahead and start it off with, I think there are two very cool eras of cars. One of them is going to probably ruffle some feathers. The first one being the one that is not going to ruffle some feathers. I feel like I'm going to get some people backing us, but like, I guess I love Radwood era cars, but specifically 90s to like early 2000s Japanese cars and the surgence of like the sports cars in that era. And like the availability of a rear wheel drive manual, just like, I feel like at that point in time, driving was so still like, it was still very analog.
Yeah.
There was some technology being introduced, and there was definitely other cars that manufacturers were doing that were like pushing the envelope of technology, but there were other cars that they were producing that were still very bare bones and analog and fun to drive, and you can still modify them to this day, as you can see.
I mean, if we look at that era, just to give some examples of the type of cars that you're talking about, you know, Mark IV Super is right in there. 300 ZX is right in there, although a lot of people don't like that car. S13, S14, even S15, although that's not a US car, all of the Skylines, and that's just, you know, that's just Japanese cars. Did you say Japanese specific, or did you say like that era?
That era, but Japanese specifically, was just really cool.
I would definitely agree, because I don't think for that time period, America really had anything that was exciting me at all. The C5 Corvette wasn't until, what year did the C5 start? I have no fucking idea.
C5 was probably
early 2000s.
I think it was like,
no, it's
so I think it might have been like late 90s, like 99.
Yeah, so the C5 can kind of fall in there. That's still a really cool car. But like Mustangs, they were awful. SN95s, yeah, really
SN95s.
The Terminator Cobra is really like the best thing of that generation that I think is an American car. That's a sports car, at least. Anything else, I don't really see anything that much. Even
I hadn't even really thought about that. Like, there was a huge fucking lull in the sports car market over here.
Like, you think like 95 to 2000, like, well, all of the best cars were Japanese.
Thinking about it now too, as I of course don't remember the last time there was like a gas shortage here, but as we all know, like,
was it 2008?
The automotive industry, no, this was in like the late 80s. Like, it's, you know, obviously the automotive industry responds when shit like that happens. And I feel like a lot of like the American sports cars are always V8s.
Yeah.
So they were like, I mean, it kind of is a moot point to like put a lot of R&D and release a V8 sports car when
we're at our worst.
You know what I'm saying?
The an exception to that, I guess, would be the like Buick Grand National.
Yeah, that is true. V6.
Yeah.
That is true.
Even still, like, a lot of the V8s in that time period were like, and we had huge displacement and not a lot of power.
I think the Mustangs of that generation were kind of whack, but we had Ford Thunderbirds that were, they weren't like great sports cars, but they were really fucking cool cars. Like, I would own a Thunderbird now.
Oh, they're the ones with the really thin. Yeah.
There's a few American cars of that generation, but priority.
The explosion was not nearly the same.
But Japanese cars, Japan, like, I mean, even now, like, Japanese sports cars of that era is literally like the peak. Like, if you're looking at like investment cars or cars that are going up in value right now, it's all the cars of that generation. RX-7s, NSXs, Skylines, Supras, and it's because they're only now just becoming legal, but it's also because they are great cars. What else about that period do you think like really attracts you to it?
for me, I guess I was specific about the like 90s Japanese cars, but I guess my bigger answer for that, my biggest golden era, is like Radwood cars. And it's not on a basis of, it's more of a golden era for me personally. It's not on a basis of whether they were reliable, whether they were like
just cars that were really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like cool cars. I feel like in that time, manufacturers were coming out with a lot of like different, like rare versions of their cars, like just very limited production. Just like you'll just find out about them years later. Like, that's weird. They only produced like 200 of these. Or
that is a good point. I hadn't even considered like the European part of that too. Like, there's definitely a lot of European cars that are contenders as being legendary in that period of time too. Like the E36 is.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's that,
you know, E30, E36 M3s are. They're great cars. They always have been. Yeah. They still are. They're timeless.
And I feel like in that time too, because there was like an oil crisis back in the 70s. So coming out of that into the 80s, people just had a little bit more wealth. Companies had a little more money. And I feel like there's always been experimentation in cars, and that's how we've progressed within cars. But in that era, I feel like it was so heavy.
Well, that was the big thing in Japan is they had the bubble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was like why... all of a sudden, you know, you had these luxury cars with just like this obscene amount of options because they just had the money to do like R&D and just throw random shit in there.
And when you're talking about that being the golden era for cars for your, or one of the golden eras, you're talking from the perspective of OEMs. You're talking like cars from factory or like limited run cars from factory. What about like modified cars or car culture outside of OEMs? Do you think that probably aligns too with the golden era for you?
I think no, it does not. As far as, like you said, OEMs and manufacturers and just kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, I think it was a really cool era because there's just so many cars that were like so far ahead in technology and then so far behind as well. And then cars right in the middle, and then weird cars like the Subaru SVX. Mm-hmm. I know that was closer to like the 2000s, but, and then there's another weird Subaru that I'm thinking about that has the steering wheel that's like it's a circle, and then it has like just, that's the right angle where the horn is. I forget the name of it. I wish I could remember.
No, I think you're thinking of the SVX.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah.
It might just be an older model of it, but
yeah.
I think as far as modified cars go, I wish I had been a part of this era, but like early 2000s, like Sex Spec and Nopey National, like all that, the hot import nights when that was
crazy, aero, crazy color, sound systems, that kind of stuff.
Like the mini trucking when that was a much bigger thing than it is now. I wish it was as big as it used to be, because that's such a cool subset of cars that, or I guess trucks that
kind of does. I feel like that does relate nicely to you, just in my eyes, because that was a lot more expressive time of like aftermarket car culture. I think, because you got to think, like everything back then was just like super out there, super wild. Everybody was trying to be different.
Yeah, there was no standards. They were just kind of like, this is either going to work or it's not. But there's making weirder shit, so let's just put it out there.
I think how it was then was like, I don't think there was ever, like you say, there was no standard. There wasn't ever like a standard of people where like, that looks bad. It was just, hey, let's do all this crazy shit. And everybody's like, that's so cool because you did all this crazy shit. It wasn't, taste hadn't like, because I don't know. I can't really say that it's like the start of aftermarket car culture, but for that generation of people, or even those types of cars, because before, I want to say like late 90s, early 2000s, everything before then was just, it was hot rodding.
It was muscle cars.
I think that's really like the start of the development for any kind of like, at least over in the US, for any kind of import stuff.
Yeah. People started getting into imports more and realizing that you can drive them around every day. And
yeah. Be like, so okay, back then, cool, there's car, almost like there isn't that standard baseline of like what looks bad. It was just the start of like all taste developing. Yeah.
Right.
Almost.
No. Well, and that's, I agree. Like, that's kind of what I'm saying is, I mean, it's what you said at that time. Like, there was no like standard quite yet.
Yeah.
For that. Like, that ultimately was so new. The only, every time I have to do that at least once an episode, I'm realizing that
It's like a fucking VHS when you get the rewind.
The only standard that I can think of that was around at that time would still be like Japan, considering that's where all the stuff came from.
I clarified the U.S. because I think Japan was way ahead of us.
I was going to say that was the thing, though, is you got to think, you know, the internet was around at that time, but like you had to know where to look to see.
You're talking about in the 90s?
Huh?
You're talking about in the 90s?
I'm talking about when Spocom was like a big thing. Yeah. Like the internet, again, that was like a forums thing. Mm. But that being the case, you know, if you came in and you weren't like up to speed with the forum shit, you were just kind of doing whatever.
I think everything was bigger with magazines at that point. Like it was like car.
Oh, honestly, yeah.
It was car clubs. They probably had like actual, kind of like how it is in the Fast and Furious movies. You know how like the first one, they have that actual store that they go in to buy stuff. I think it was more like
A million percent. I don't know how
the community was definitely different then, because the internet wasn't so readily available for everybody. It was definitely magazines and stores, and community was probably a little bit like more together at that time, where it's like you can go to a store and buy this, or you can join this club and
but it's kind of like, you know, what you and I have talked about before, where I see a lot more kinship between like lowriders and Spocom than I do between like lowriders and what we have now.
Yeah,
like far and away, because there's a lot more custom work, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like on any car, any given car.
Yeah.
You know, they're using
was bolt on back then.
They're using graphics, you know, they're doing hand painted stuff. I mean, airbrushing, all that kinds of shit. All of that was transferred over.
Right.
But
it was just different tastes, different medium. Cars.
They were doing it on like Chevy Cavaliers.
Exactly.
Like
that's the other thing that I was, you know, that I was having a conversation in the Sad Machines Discord at one point, is it's kind of like some of the shit, if you like run into some photos of just like random ass fuck, because they were making kits for everything. Like anything you can fucking imagine.
PT Cruises,
and you would like run into just random shit, and it was just because at that time they were like, I mean, well, and over time,
use what you got.
Yeah, and over time, because it started to like narrow down, because people decided like, oh, this is what looks good and this doesn't look good.
Yeah,
that's exactly what happened. It just started to like funnel into like, this is cool. If you go outside of these lines, it's either not cool or not as cool.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a valid point, and I think that for that being the golden era of, I guess, like aftermarket car culture for you, it does make sense. I think just going off of some of the stuff that we said, like it being the early stages of the expressive side of like import cars or just that styling, and then not being a standard, just means that everybody was a lot more expressive. Like nobody was following certain rules or whatever, and there's so much crazy shit you could see.
Not for nothing too, from a photography standpoint, and I'm just thinking about this, I mean, and I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, somebody hop in the comments and tell me I'm fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. But I would say that when the magazine started coming out, like Import Tuners and like Euro Racer and all that kind of stuff, like the photography was different. Like car photography up to that point, I mean, yeah, of course it was varied, I'm sure, in many different applications, but like that period of time, those magazines had like a very distinct style to them. Like you had
Photos cropped at an angle.
You had like fisheye.
Yeah, wide angle shots. Yeah, all the cars are flash lit, which is always been the golden standard of magazine features. Is that they're always like flash lit cars. Mm-hmm. They're very well put together. And I think that's because back then, it wasn't accessible for you to have a camera and take those sick pictures. So it was either like really just normal pictures, or it's really, really crazy magazine pictures, because there was no in between, where everybody has a high end fucking iPhone camera, or they have like a high end DSLR that's accessible to them.
Sorry guys, I'm just letting the dogs breathe.
Letting them breathe, give them a toss.
But it's like, yeah, and I hadn't even really thought about that now until I said it. It was kind of like, it's weird that the crossover, but like, I feel like one of the things that may have been sharing that feel of photography would be like action sports, would be like Thrasher magazine.
Yeah, because it was the same stuff. Even to this day, they, you know, skateboarding and any kind of action sports photography is very much shot similarly to how cars were shot for magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wide angle lenses, flashes, all of that stuff.
Not only do I think that's really cool, I think that also speaks to what he's talking about, where it makes sense that that aligns with Ben.
Yeah,
because it's this really innovative, expressive point.
Well, the other golden era, I guess. This one kind of bridges both OEM and modified. The other one that I think will ruffle some feathers is now. The era we are in now. I know there's a lot of issues that we can see every single day, but if you think about it, the accessibility to so many different types of cars.
You're talking about aftermarket car culture right now?
Aftermarket car culture or just OEMs from the factory. Just
you can, aftermarket, I can definitely agree. I think that there's a fair point to be made for accessibility for everything, you know, being the fact that you can just go on websites now and like order car parts, have them there in 2 days and, you know, put a car together. I definitely agree with you on the accessibility point, but going back to, you know, the expressive time period, doing custom stuff, really like going crazy with cars, I think we're lacking a lot of that.
I think
nowadays.
The thing that's hard.
That's just my take on that.
What I was going to say, to clarify my point is the fact that you can go get an 1,000 horsepower Dodge Demon from somewhere, and that's like supercharged, just a very raw sort of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go get a super quiet, very efficient, like electric car, or you can get an electric sports car, or you can get like a very efficient gas car. Sorry, Elon, I know you hate gas. there's just so many different types of cars that you can get nowadays, which I feel like there's a lot of potential for each of those cars, but people just don't go down that route.
Like my brain, as I'm sure many of us, is kind of like chained to, I guess, where we live. I won't say the US cause not everybody listening to this is from the US, but, I feel like it's like, it can be very chained to where you live when you think about that. But honestly, I tend to agree with you. When you think about the world at large and all of the different models available everywhere, not just in the place that we live, like there is some really interesting design going on.
Yeah.
Again, I think we're coming back into the cycle that will continue into infinity, where it's like there's like an explosion of, you know, creating and going different directions. And then it all kind of melts together and then it all happens again.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think right now, you know, probably what year is it? It's 2022. I feel like around 2017, because that's when the FK8 Type R came out.
Yeah.
I think it was when that came out was when I looked around and started to be like, all right, everybody's kind of, at least all this, you know, all the sports car lines are kind of coming back to the table and being like, all right,
yeah, well, I can
you have
that.
This, I have this.
Yeah.
I have that.
Yeah. There's
Ford had the Focus RS come out at that time too, which was a big excitement in the US cause it was the first time the RS name returned here. So,
yeah. And so, then nowadays you have the Hyundai Elantra N and the Veloster.
Yeah. The whole N line actually. Yeah.
Say what you will about Hyundai cars. I have a Hyundai Tucson. That thing has not done me wrong one single time in the last 30,000 miles I've owned
Korean cars are making.
Korean cars are awesome.
They're making a statement right now.
Korean cars are like, Korean cars are walking the walk about fuck you to everybody that laughed at them before. Like I cannot even describe it's like
Genesis design language. Is that mind? Cause that's what I always think of.
The new Genesis.
I'm talking about just like across all of their models. It's kind of like somebody at one of the top people in Hyundai woke up one day and was like, oh fuck, all of these cars are boring as shit. We need to do something about that.
Yeah.
And it's every single model line, every single one. They were like, all right, here's a new team. Catch up. And it was just like they did.
Yeah.
Like, and yes, especially the Genesis line. Holy fuck.
Yeah, those Genesis cars, the SUVs, the sedan. Like,
the thing is everything like,
they're putting out right now.
Equus, cool. I remember when I was working at Honda, I worked with a guy who worked with Hyundai and Equus like before he worked there. And I just remember talking to him one time, and he was talking about how, you know, just how fucking involved those cars are in that, like, they were for real, like, executive luxury sedans. I mean, they were putting in, at least on the interior, the same amount of work as, like, Lexus or Toyota, mm-hmm. whatever. But, you know, it was an Equus. So, like, they were cool, but people weren't falling all over themselves to go get one.
Yeah.
But, like, you look at them now, you look at how they've kind of, like, matured.
Dude, like, the the Genesis, I can't remember which one it is. It might, like... But the one that's like a smaller sedan that's really sporty.
The G70.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
It's the G70. Those things look so
would probably buy that just based off of looks and styling. I would buy that over an M3 all day.
Oh, yeah.
No.
It's a really good looking car. And then they have that G90, which, dude, that's like a VIP. Yeah. That is a VIP wet dream for me. That thing's sick. Dude,
and that's what I'm saying. And it's just like it literally came out of what seemed like nowhere for them.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you think of a, like, like a 2010 Hyundai Accent.
Dude, or like an Elantra. It is the most
boring car.
Bro.
They're all rental cars. That's why I make the joke about your car being a rental car is because that's just what I associated Korean cars with for such a long time.
And it was just, and then fucking out of nowhere, out of absolutely nowhere. And it's like, honestly, this sounds like a convenient thing for me to say, but like, the only reason I even like my ears started to perk up on Hyundai was I saw like how their WRC cars were performing and how they sounded and how they looked. And I was like, yo,
I don't know
about outside of the fucking rally stage, but these guys are not fucking around out here.
Which if we look at history, rally cars have done a lot for how cool the OEMs have appeared.
Are you cool if we roll into mine? Cause it's very much has to do with what he just said. So my golden era, I think, is really ultimately going to be from 85 to 95, plus minus like 2 years. Because the amount of like advancement and just general wildness and, you know, technological advancement, but also like design wise. The reason that segues into this is I think the Tomica Skyline, like the Super Silhouette Racer, was like 83, I think. It was it was before 85, I believe. But it's kind of like that's when, you know, the 80s cars pretty much across the board were really boxy. You know, that was the style during the 80s.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because just right now when I'm talking, I'm kind of thinking in the JDM part of it. You know, you look at JDM cars in the 70s and you look at American cars in the 70s and they're like
very different.
Well, no, honestly, not completely.
Scale, they're very different. Styling similar. Styles are very different.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Celica GT liftback is a tiny Mustang.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what I was going to say. It's like you look at a Ken Mary Skyline. If you look at it from far enough away and only see the front end, you're like, oh, that's a Dodge Challenger or Charger. I don't remember fucking which one because I don't care about Mopar.
Doesn't matter.
But it's, you know what I'm saying? So they were like sharing stuff, but that was all like still really soft flowing, like, oh, we want to create a beautiful car kind of line. And obviously they were, and that's fine. But you get to the 80s and all of a sudden, like, this vibe of just like angles and straight lines and, you know what I'm saying? This and that and this and that. It's like, that's car wise, that's a deviation. Like, before that point in time, again, I'm going to step in front of myself and say there could be a whole part of car design that I didn't know about that they were manufacturing, weren't just concept cars. But I feel like it's fair to say that before the 80s, the only time you were really seeing cars that were like really boxy and sharp like that was like concept cars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I also think a lot of that was to do with production limitations, actually, because you got to think about it back then. Like, I don't know what the limitations were, but it makes sense in my head that for it would be easier to make body panels that are more angular because you just... Mm-hmm. You just bend the metal in those ways, whatever. Whereas nowadays where everything is, or even in the 90s to the 2000s, where everything's a lot more rounded. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's definitely, you know, I'm not knowledgeable on it, but I feel like there's probably a lot more technical side of making those body panels.
And the other thing is that, at least in Japan, that kind of falls back to the bubble thing.
Yeah.
But I'll come back to the bubble thing. The reason that I was like, got so hot on what you were talking about when you mentioned the rally cars thing, is during that period of time, if anybody knows anything about rally, generally speaking, it's about Group B and the Audi Quattro and all the Lancias and all of this stuff, right? The Audi Quattro is an unbelievable example about how motorsport, rally specifically in this context, had a massive effect on what became the consumer cars, because... Mm-hmm. The Audi Quattro, it was not the first vehicle. It was like kind of, as far as I know, it was kind of the first vehicle with all-wheel drive as opposed to four-wheel drive.
Right.
What that means is, if I remember correctly, they were able to, you know, toggle where the majority of the power went between the front and the rear. It wasn't just like you had four high, four low, you know, shit that you use for off-roading. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the more they're developing that, the more they're like, we can put this into consumer cars. Granted, I take that back. Because Subaru Brats in, like, the late 70s, I remember they had, I guess, like, what was an early version of all-wheel drive. They still called it four-wheel drive in those cars because I think they had four high and four low. But at that time, Subaru was still working on all that stuff. But I digress. Everything that they were watching the Quattro do under just pushing it to the limit on rally stages, they're like, well, fuck, if we can build a system that can do that under these conditions, like,
yeah,
we can put this in consumer.
Yeah, products. Right. Some of that technology trickles down to,
you know what
to
I mean?
The consumer level. The reason that I was jumping to the rally stuff was actually more from the perspective of the cars and teams that do really well in rally, at least for me, are the ones that then attract me to those brands. So for me, seeing like all of, like, I grew up in England where fast forwards was a very popular thing. Mm-hmm. Seeing these really special, like, homologation rally cars that were Fords, like, you know, it's not necessarily a rally car, but the RS 500 Sierra Cosworth.
Yeah.
Like, that's a special car.
What are you talking about? That's 100% a rally car.
What was the RS 500?
RS 500, RS 200. Anything with the word Cosworth in it was like,
a rally
wet dream, basically.
See, I'm not super knowledgeable on actual racing stuff.
You know what's into it, but you know what's fun? Oh, okay.
The point that I was making with it is just that those cars made Ford cool to me.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you just look at all the other regular, you know, Econo boxes, I'm just like, all right, that's a Ford. But those cars, because they were really fast and they were in racing and they did so well and they were so popular, were cool to me. And I think Audi, kind of a similar thing. Although, yes, there's definitely technology.
Well, here's what I'm going to your point, but here's what I'm going to say.
That's my consumer take on it.
With Audi, I would argue that up to that point, Audi, so you think about it this way. The Japanese car market, size-wise, versus the European car market, size-wise, is like, there's less brands to choose from in the European market.
Yes.
Comparatively. Do you understand? Yeah. Especially back then, right? So Audi, just like Volkswagen, kind of had its place. You know, it already had sports cars. People knew, you know, what that stuff was.
Yeah.
You know, Subaru, for me, I mean, because I'm me, one of the examples that I'm going to use is Subaru, people really like the Brat. You know what the Brat is?
Subaru Brat is
basically,
when you said,
like,
Subaru Brats, I thought you were talking about people that are like super nerdy about Subarus. They'll punch anybody that like doesn't like them or some shit.
No, Subaru Brats are fucking cool.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I have no idea what a Subaru Brat is, so I'll have to look that up.
Was, like I said, it was late 70s, I suppose early to mid 80s also, but it was basically like a ute.
Do you remember almost. The Subaru Baja?
Yeah.
It was basically like the granddad of
predecessor.
That.
Yeah.
Okay. They were basically like a ute. But they were like low key, they were like fun vehicles. Mm-hmm. Like they came from the factory with like seats in the back facing the back.
Cool.
In the bed of the truck. And so, but yeah, they had four high, four low because, Subaru, I don't honestly don't remember if it was, I almost want to look it up, but I'm just going to keep talking and give the disclaimer that I may have no idea what I'm talking about. But if I remember correctly, that was kind of Subaru's first really big rollout of their four-wheel drive system.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, Subarus were just front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, yeah, that's a good point, at least for me too. Even just looking at it from that same consumer point, I feel like Subarus to me wouldn't be cool, or they wouldn't exist to me. Well, like, it wouldn't exist as like a cool vehicle if it wasn't for their...
Well, so
rally
what
heritage.
I was going to say is like you fast forward to their entrance to rally.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if you looked at a Subaru Legacy from that time period,
mm-hmm.
it's another 80s Econo box. Like it's certainly not ugly, but it's just very basic
it's
would you say?
Literally just a boxy 80s sedan.
Yeah. So
like whatever image comes to your brain,
that's it.
Yeah. That's what a Legacy was in that time.
So but all of a sudden you have Colin McRae's wild ass gets in one of those.
Rest
he joins Subaru. Rest in
yeah,
peace.
For real.
For real, for real. You know, he joins Subaru and all of a sudden people are like, look at what that fucking car is doing. Holy right. shit. You know what I mean? It's like they have fucking, God, I'm getting goosebumps over here. They have the super, you know, the super dark blue, the first like Subaru Rally blue, the super dark blue with the yellow logos and stuff. And mm-hmm. you just fucking see that. You fucking hear the boxer noises. Like all of a sudden, there's this car, the Legacy, where people would be like, eh.
All of a sudden,
cool. It's cool as fuck.
Right.
Right. And then from there.
Would you say at that time that they were leaving the Legacy?
So Ben's fired.
All right. I'm going to go get more juice.
So, but yeah. So from there, the progression became to the Subaru Impreza, the first generation Subaru Impreza. And once again, Colin McRae. Holy shit. Look at that little sedan go.
Right.
All the while, Subaru is testing out and advancing their all-wheel drive system. You know, that's not to mention all of, I was just using them as an example.
Mm-hmm.
All of these other manufacturers that were involved in this stuff were all doing that. They were all building off of that. And the nice thing about motorsports, it's not just Rally, you know, that does that. It's any motorsport where these manufacturers can be like, all right, here's an engine. Here's how we've set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Go stress it the fuck out.
Right.
Let's see what breaks and what stays together. And then it's just this constant trial and error. So all of a sudden, motorsport is marketing. Motorsport is money when you win. And motorsport is R&D.
Yeah,
you're stress testing all of these different parts. You're like, maybe they'll work, maybe they won't. And you know what? It's motorsports, so it doesn't have to look super pretty.
Right.
If Which, that's, you know.
It's funny when you like compare that to Formula One. Formula One yeah. is just marketing because they have like so many restraints on like what you can and can't do. Then obviously they're all open wheel cars that aren't based on production vehicles anyway. Mm-hmm. So any like brand that's attached to it, like Ferrari, is like, okay, yeah, they built the motor and they're very successful and they're very well known in the Formula One industry, but it's not a fucking car you can go buy.
Right.
Like the thing with rally cars, like
they
you're seeing
homologation
them at, yeah,
cars.
You're literally mm-hmm. seeing cars that are based on cars you can buy that are going fucking ham.
Yeah, which
and they're anybody, getting to do all of the testing.
Anybody
and,
that doesn't know that word, just so you have context and you have a little bit of knowledge today that you may not have this morning. Homologation is a big word, especially in rally, because a homologation car is basically like the rules for a long while were in order to have a rally car in the World Rally Championship, you had to make, I think it was like at 500. Least 500.
That's where the RS 500 name comes from, yeah, for the Sierra.
You had to make at least 500 street legal road going versions of that car in order to use it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have these crazy fucking rally cars, and you can be sitting here, you know, watching WRC. And then, you know, if you're in Japan, for instance, you can be watching this and you can go to the Subaru dealership down the street, mm-hmm. and there's a fucking blue Subaru WRX just staring you in the face.
Right.
Like, you know, like there's, you can't explain, if you have the resources to go and get that Impreza, you cannot fucking explain, at least for me, you couldn't explain the excitement at the idea of being like, I can literally go buy that right now. No, yeah. It's not exactly the same.
Right.
But it looks exactly the same. It's still a sports car. It's fun to... So it's like... That's kind of part of the reason why, you know, that 85 to 95 just really hits for me. Because motorsport is motorsport. It's all, you know, it's always evolving. Mm-hmm. But, like, you think about that period of time... Granted, again, Super Silhouette, I feel like was like late 70s and mid 80s, I think. But regardless, I'll catch all Super Silhouette racing at Fuji Speedway. So yeah, you have Super Silhouette racing, which is something that we've talked about before, which is kind of like a huge inspiration for where, you know, Kaido racers and like the crazy body work and the aero and shit came from.
Liberty Walk as a company and their wide body kits is all based off of that originally. Like the guy that runs Liberty Walk, he was into Kaido racers. That was his thing. So that's where that style comes from.
And it's like, really cool. So, you know, you had that going to Europe, you had DTM. Mm-hmm. Like, and anybody that doesn't know what DTM is, definitely check it out. It's fucking so intense. Cool. You know, and then you have Group B, obviously. You start getting into the early 90s, you have Group A. And it's like all the while, you have the homologation cars, but also even outside of motorsport, they were just going fucking insane. I mean, again, yeah. Especially in Japan, because they had the bubble, they were just like, what if we did this?
Yeah.
What if we put this, 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 and this in a non-like luxury sedan car? Like they had so much money from the bubble to just like put into just trying shit. But then, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, I'm a fucking synth wave cyberpunk motherfucker. Like that's
me, just, and you share that similarity. Yeah,
that's
a lot.
Just what, you know, that's just the style that I enjoy. So of course the 80s are gonna scratch that itch. But yeah, and I mean, the other thing is like, there was a lot of automotive innovation to whatever degree that may be. You know, I think it may have already been out, but EFI, electronic fuel injection, was starting to pick up speed at that point in time, which that brought its own, you know, leaps and bounds from a performance standpoint at the time. And then you just had all kinds of cool shit. Like you think about the 300ZX and like the digital dash and all that kind of shit. Into the early 90s, you have Toyota and the digital dash. I mean, you just have all of this cool stuff that kind of happened in this span.
In that
of period. Like, all well, the 10 years.
Yeah, innovative things happened in those time as opposed to now, where there's not as, I don't feel like there's as much innovation nowadays.
And you know what I just thought about too?
What?
Computers.
Yeah.
Computer. So that's 100% one thing that I didn't think about when I started this out, when we were talking about the design language between the 70s and the 80s, computers. Everybody's using computers now to design cars. So for better or for worse, you're having a more sharp, angular, robotic feel to the cars because they're not at the mercy of like the fluidity of the human hand. Again, for better or for worse, you know what I mean? But it's like, that's the other thing.
It's nowadays, kind of people's cars are their computers.
Yeah, no fucking joke. Yeah. Seriously.
Also, no, there's cool cars nowadays too. I'm kind of refuting exactly what I said earlier. Yeah. But
No. Well, no, we know. You know, we all know. And it's like, but it is interesting because it's kind of this, God, I've got to I keep moving away from it.
You sounded fine. That just sounded so much worse. You adjusting?
I'm very sorry, everyone. It's fine. I'm very sorry.
You're fired.
But it's kind of a microcosm about how the rest of this shit happened when the internet came out. It's like the internet shows up, or not even just the internet, but just like consumer personal computers show up, and all of a sudden, like, everybody knows everything. Everybody has access to everything. So it's like everything just fucking made this light speed advancement.
Yeah.
And cars were no different. You know what I mean? Everything in a rally car that once had to be mechanically controlled or controlled by a super simple computer, you know, the engineers now had more room to play with that.
Right.
And the more stress tests that they were able to put that through in motorsport, the more they were going to be like, all right, well, we can dial that way the fuck down and put it on our consumer cars. Yeah. And then things just started to get cooler from there.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
And I think so, on the one last thing on the note of like 80s and 90s cars, the availability of those shitty Econo boxes that you were talking about, having cool variations.
Yeah.
Like the Dodge Omni or the Shelby, I don't know, Dodge Omni GLS, that little hatchback.
Yeah.
Which I feel like we're maybe starting to see a return of that, because you're definitely, it's but like on the subject of Ford, for instance, like there's an ST Explorer, there's an Edge ST.
Well, and that's kind of what I was speaking to about what he was saying, how it's kind of like right now. Yeah. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that. More that cycle come back to like the explosion
of normal chassis
where they're just like trying stuff. Yeah. Now, what kind of sucks, at least for those of us who live in the United States, is because of what's going on with gas right now, that is undoubtedly going to have an effect on how much exploring these companies are going to continue doing for the time being.
I mean, but ultimately, it may actually result in there being more cars that are like the better, like the cool versions or like sporty versions of regular cars, because you got to think about it now, like the US for a long time has produced sports cars on their own, like the Corvette is its own thing, the Mustang is its own thing, blah blah blah, and I don't think those will change, but you've seen it a lot in the European markets to where they have sporty versions of the normal cars, and that's because gas is way more expensive over there. They can't afford to be putting V8s and everything. The taxes are too high.
I guess that's a good point.
And so because stuff is high,
$8 a gallon.
Yeah, because gas is so high here, maybe in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, if we don't all just fucking fall off the face of the earth, maybe we start seeing more of that over here. Because we have to start, you know, thinking more about the economy. We have to think more about, you know, climate change and trying to be more efficient. So I think you are going to see more restrictions on bigger engines. You're going to see more, you know, smaller displacement that is more powerful. Better alternatives to regular cars.
Lord knows they're, you know, they're doing, look at the fucking GR Yaris.
Right.
That's exhibit number one. I mean,
That's a car they would have produced and sold in Europe from the start of time. But
3-cylinder turbo that's making, I'm pretty sure it's more than 300 horsepower.
Right. They would never sell
3 cylinders.
10 years ago, they would never sell that here because there'd be no demand for it. Everyone's like, well, if it ain't over 4 liters, I don't want it. And so now that everything's getting a little bit more tight and everybody's just like, fuck, what can we do?
Right.
I think you may start seeing more of a switch in that direction. And I'm not mad about that at all. I've grown up loving hatches, so I'd be okay with that.
I think that's why that's the one, you know, for me, just because there really was that kind of like explosion, like across the board. But, and again, being who I am, you know, the really like retro futuristic aesthetic of that obviously plays a big part. But I think that really was a really interesting period of time as a result of personal computers and the internet, whereas like,
and motorsport,
definitely as a result, because you know, it's like, you think about, okay, you think about from the 50s to the 60s, right? Car design. It's honestly really interesting. I mean, it's that in and of itself was, you know, people were being really like artsy and out there. Like you see some of these really like uncommon, like 50s cars that just look like somebody put a fucking decorative building on wheels.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I want to get to that in a second, because that's actually like part of my era. But on the topic of like stuff that's happening now that is really cool and different, our sponsor, Wheel Price.
I knew it. I did too.
I was going to see what he was going to finish it with.
I was waiting. I was about to be like, what about our sponsor?
I literally just realized I'm going to be blocked by the thing. Anyway, well, Matt, do you want to take over? You want to do the ad read? You haven't done one.
I can try, Kyle. I'm sorry in advance.
He's AI at the end of the day. So.
Guys, Wheel Price, I can't.
Here's my ad read.
Liam has derailed this.
Yes, you guys have created a wonderful app that I personally have never used because I've only had one modified car that I found wheels for a marketplace. That was before Wheel Price for it was a thing.
Where would you look now?
I would look now on a really cool app that I know of called Wheel Price that sponsors the show.
Can I get extra points for talking to a friend of mine the other day asking me about wheels? And I was like, I literally, the answer to the question was Wheel Price app and then the little eyes emoji.
Yeah, no. If you need to go find wheels anywhere, three-piece wheels, one-piece wheels, pretty much whatever you want to find, I'm sure they're going to have it on Wheel Price.
To be honest, of all the periods that we are talking about in this episode, you can probably find sets of wheels from any of those time periods. You know, you can find classic Japanese wheels, old European wheels. You can find modern stuff. There's even companies that are listing their brand new wheels on there. It's all kind of stuff, but it's a community-based thing, and the app is only going to get better the more people that get on there. So, for any of you guys that are listening to this show and you really appreciate what we do and you want to support the show further, please go support Wheel Price because, you know, they're no different than we are. Three guys that are super involved with what they do, and they're very passionate about it. And I want to see that grow, as do we want to see this show grow. So, yeah,
damn, I'm glad he took back over.
That's why he does the fucking
ad-read. I would not have been able to manage that.
Damn, all right. So. Well, I got a lot of work to do if I want to continue this.
Yeah, like I said, Wheel Price, I shouted you out to one of my friends in my Instagram DM. So, can I have free wheels, please?
Wheel Price, you guys have cool cars.
Sponsor me.
That is a fact. You can go look up the owners of Wheel Price because their cars are really cool.
Is it Kyle that has the EF?
Speaking of early 80s, late 90s vibes.
Ooh, vibes.
Kyle's white EF on, I believe, they're Enki wheels with some kind of fans that I need in my life.
I think they're just Enki, the like standard style. I don't know what the
meshes or something.
Yeah, like the meshes, and then he has those crazy.
I'll be honest. Coming from somebody who has put some serious thought, and I've put it away for now, but I've put some serious thought into legitimately just getting some Steelies and putting moon discs on my TSX. Mm-hmm. It's not totally out of the question. Maybe, I don't know, but the point of me saying that is. If he would sell me those covers, I would 100% just put Steelies on the motherfucker and just put the covers on the car.
I fucking love them so much. They're so cool.
But
yeah, guys, go support Wheel Price, and we want to see that app grow. We want to see this show grow, so go check it out.
Can I buy Steelies on Wheel Price?
I guarantee there's a set of Steelies. If you have a set of Steelies that you want to sell, go list them on Wheel Price right now. I'm actually looking on Wheel Price because I'm trying to search around for a set of wheels for my car that I talked about in the last episode. So if you do have a set of wheels that are 5x114, preferably 18s, list them on the site. I'm going to be looking around and potentially maybe I'll buy something. It really just depends if I can get some of the issues taken care of with the car. But I'll be looking regardless.
They be looking. These two boys be looking at all times.
A lot of time looking.
I love Marketplace.
You're not supposed to fucking say that after the damn ad read. Jesus.
I'm talking about cars, the big cars, the one that have four wheels instead of...
Oh, a whole like, car.
Yeah, not the just the wheels, the big metal cage and engine that goes around them. That's where I find that on Marketplace.
The big metal cage.
Yeah, the one that goes room and it's kind of scary when you look at it.
We're all just driving around in big metal cages waiting to die.
Yeah, isn't that just our body?
Anyway, on the topic of big metal cages waiting to die, I want to actually get into like my golden era of cars. This ought to be good.
What a lead-in! Holy shit!
Kind of similar to how Ben was saying, like it may. You know, well, you had two. I kind of have two as well, and they're both from different kind of points. But just going off of what we were just talking about, I think that the 60s, I think the mid 60s up in, well, maybe not even the early 70s. I literally think that the mid 60s to the 70s, or just the start of the 70s, was like stylistically some of the coolest. I'm talking America. These were some of the coolest motherfucking cars ever. Like my favorite all-time like old man dream cars is like a 64, 65 Mustang Notchback. Yeah. I think that those are some of the prettiest looking cars.
It set the standard. It set the standard.
I think that kind of built the like taste for American sports cars.
Right. I think that there's definitely some cars in the 50s that were really, really cool. But I think the car styling, car design really, really took over at that point. Because, I mean, you think back further before then, like before the 50s, like I feel like everything's still just like, it's just like a car on wheels. Like cars just existed with wheels on them. They had an engine, they moved. Yeah. They didn't start getting like stylistically cool until like 50s, then going into the 60s.
Because the world wasn't happy until then.
Right. Well, the world was obviously pretty crazy. The shit wasn't you had. Happy world War. It was pretty crazy at that time.
That's what I had to say. No, Ben, please no.
But then you got in the 50s, everyone had wealth. They started doing cool shit.
Well, I think one thing that's interesting, though, at least for me, is like cars in the 50s. It's kind of why I made, you know, the statement that I made is you had that gap. You had that gap, right? You had, again, people can fact check me on this, I guess. I don't really care. But like during that period, World War One and World War Two. So World War One was like 1917, I think. And then by the time, you know, you go through all that time, and by the time World War II is over, it's 1948. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have cool, like, 48. 40s cars. You know right. what I'm saying? Huh?
48?
Yeah.
45.
World War II? 45. No, 40. Was VJ Day not in 40? Oh, shit, you're right.
41 to 45.
You're right. Okay.
Anyways.
Sorry. No, but what I'm saying is, like, the reason that I made the joke that I was like, it was like a building on wheels.
Oh, yeah.
You look at, like, the Model Ts were very bare bones. Model Ts and Model A's, whatever. But, you know, they started to get bigger and bulkier, and they had, like, the really, like, streamliney type shit,
You had the Rolls Royces and stuff that were a lot more fancy and a little bit more styling.
It was really opulent, kind of. Once you arrived at like the 60s, they started to be like, let's build a sports one.
Like we can really literally fast like, one. Yeah. But okay. So for me, like the key points of that period are two cars that I think really set in stone two giant subcultures that are still very alive today. And that is 1964 when the Mustang first came around. That car stylistically was revolutionary to the way that like that was the start of the pony car. That is what I think muscle cars were based off of. If for US sports cars, that is the start of it for me. And then lowrider culture, the 64 Impala for me is the staple of lowrider culture.
59 Impala.
Well, 64 for me is just one that has been popularized by rap music and a lot of stuff that I grew up seeing.
The 59s are...
Yeah, I'm fantastic. This is just my perspective, by the way, guys. I'm just being
obnoxious.
No. I'm not trying to say that the 64 Impala is like, that is the car for low riding. That's just the car for me for low riders. So yeah, 64, 65, I think, with the Mustang and the Impala were like really special for me stylistically for cars. And then once you got into the 70s, the Mustangs took like the weirdest turn. Like the Mark 1 of like 71 was just fucking strange. It looked so big.
Looked like a spaceship.
Yeah, and then you got into the 80s and late 70s, nobody talks about those generation of Mustangs because they were so bad.
Oh, yeah.
And then the 80s, you got into the Fox bodies, which at the time, I don't think were that cool, but now they're incredible.
No, the first generation of Fox bodies with like the fucking like sealed beam headlights are disgusting. Yeah. I hate them. Then the one with the brick headlights, I love them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys know of the Mustang 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's so bad. That's 70s. It's 70, like, that was like the oil crisis, like I was talking about. So there wasn't a lot of money being thrown at cars like that. Like, that's probably why you didn't see a lot of development with those sports cars and stuff like that, or just like a lot of significant changes or changes that just made sense. Like, you just probably didn't see a lot of that because there were bigger issues to worry about.
Right. Yeah.
But even that, you know, 65 to 70,
48, what a fucking dude. What was I even thinking about?
Even though like in the 60s, there's still like, I'm talking specifically American cars. There's so many cars in that time period that I think are just so cool. Well, that's they're all huge. They're all really like, they sound great. They're all like really smooth. It's the big displacement, very low power. They're almost, it's not over engineered necessarily, but it's just like low end torque. They're just great cruising cars.
That's kind of what I was saying is like,
that's my thing.
Before that, the reason that I use the word opulent is it was like the way that they were designing cars in the US at the time. It was like a status piece kind of deal, right?
All the chrome pieces, and it's angular like sharp objects coming off of it.
They were big and like bubbly because they had a presence. Just like
the hood ornaments.
I have a car. I'm somebody that owns a car, right? But it's like all of a sudden, once, like I said, at some point, U.S. automakers were like, let's make a sports car and put a big V. I'm like doing a regular car reviews thing right now. Put a big V8 in it and build a car.
My wife has triceps now.
put a big V8 and build a car around the engine. You know what I'm saying? And it's like all of a sudden, you know, these big, like bulky whatevers, you know, the car that's in mind as I say this is like all the Dodges, like the Barracudas, the Chargers, the Challengers. All of a sudden you have like this car with a fat ass that comes to a point in the front with a big ass V8 in it. Because, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I just think that is really cool that you bring that up, that it's just like, again, I think the coolest thing that I'm realizing now is,
I think those cars are just timeless.
Whenever the cycle
with a pH,
whenever the cycle that I mentioned comes back around, it's like the car industry was constipated and then they finally get to just like let all of it go. And there's like a million fucking things at one time, which I feel like is kind of what happened there. Cause you have Ford, Chevrolet, GMC, fucking, what is it? AMC was still a thing at the time. Like
that was one of the cars of I just saw it like a couple days ago. They had an AMC little hatchback with a,
oh, the Gremlin.
Well, no, not even
Gremlin
that.
Was cool.
Gremlin was cool as fuck. It was a different one, like a Spirit or something. I don't know. Had a big old carbureted V8 in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Like, why do you need that in a 2-door hatchback?
I don't know, but I bet
big ass V8.
I bet it'll rip a nasty one, dude.
It probably will, but it will only go like 110.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all that fucking mattered. The cars looked cool. They sounded cool, and they could do fucking burnouts.
Yeah,
brother.
That shit is cool as fuck. I'm not like a big motorsports guy. You guys know this. Like, I'm more stylistically driven. And so those cars have always really appealed to me. And even Cadillacs at that time period, fucking incredible.
Yeah, it's not a whole different. It's a lowrider thing too. But yeah, Cadillacs at that point were like fucking insane. Yeah. Like saying those things were boats. Those things were like cruise ships.
I don't know if Cadillac would even still be like a thing nowadays had it not been for that era of Cadillacs establishing such a standard.
Honestly, because, I think you're right.
At that time, I mean, if you think about it, at that time, the people who are buying Cadillacs now are probably the people who were looking at those Cadillacs in that time frame.
Right,
like,
they were kids.
At the dealership,
they were probably kids at that time, and they were like, I want a Cadillac. And when they got older, they probably
That's what's always been
brand.
So interesting. And it makes total sense,
It's the same thing with Lincoln. I've looked at this.
That's what
Lincoln.
I was about to say, is it's like, it makes total sense. It's very unsurprising, but for whatever reason, it's interesting to me to look at the cars that, like, the older, not like boomers, like the older generation.
The people
drive.
Who shouldn't be driving.
Yeah, exactly. The people that at this point should not be driving. They all drive like these big fucking long yachts, like fucking Grand Marquis, Crown Victoria, fucking big long Cadillac. I can't remember what the really cool ones that they make low riders out of. Yes.
Yeah.
Cadillac. DeVille, and just like all these big long cars. Because that's what they've driven. For really, because even if it wasn't a Cadillac back then, if it wasn't a sports car, it was still big and long.
Right, right. They were still luxury.
You look at the 70s, and it's like you think of a car chase in a 70s movie. You immediately think of them drifting around the corner and the car almost rolling the fuck over because of the body roll. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Like, big and heavy and steel.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just all big and heavy and steel. So it's like that's what they're used to. Yeah. So they're just like, hey, this one still kind of looks like that. Yeet.
Right, right. But leaning into my other golden era, which I know this is probably what everybody expects from me anyway. I'm going to say literally mid to late 90s into early 2000s. I'm going to say from the period of 90.
From the period when they first came out with the Lexus LS Retro.
Basically. Let's be serious.
When they came out with it and then when they stopped making it. Exactly. That's
his golden era. Still to this day, I think that the LS400 is one of the greatest cars ever made.
Truth be told, it kind of is. It was their flagship.
It was a flagship car. It's still to this day, like, I will drive mine that is so unbelievably low and not really that great to drive, and it's still really good to drive.
Incredibly reliable, comfortable.
I made this point earlier that I've now had back-to-back two early 90s Toyota cars. I've had two Toyotas that were early 90s that had the four-speed automatic in them. And although the one in the Majesta was not that good, it was not very responsive. It had this weird thing where it'd rev out second gear and then it's really low in the third, which most of these cars, being luxury cars, are designed to have low-end torque. So when you pull away from the light, it's kind of how the old American cars were. They're very torquey, low-end, and it's just to get up to speed. Top-end, there's nothing there. I quite enjoy that type of car and that type of driving, but the difference between those earlier 90s cars with that four speed and then late 90s, the five speed that's in the LS that I have, the UCF 20, is night and day. That car, you don't even feel it shift at all, ever. Right. And it's always in the right gear. I've never had an issue with that car where, like, I could be driving up a steep mountain road and it's always doing the right thing at the right time. Mm-hmm. And it's 20 something years old. Like, it always impresses me that car has so much power in the low end.
It is really
cool. And everything in that car works. Every old Toyota I've had,
they all just work. Toyota far and away won that battle from day one, because you think about, for example, you think about a President versus a Crown Majesta. Right.
You talking Nissan President versus Crown Majesta?
Mm-hmm. Nissan President versus Crown Majesta. Apples to apples, completely stock, top of the line, whatever. Mm-hmm. Same mileage, right? And you have both of them. Which one do you think is going to start, shit's going to start coming down first? The Toyota or the Nissan?
Nissan always.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like that Toyota won that from the jump. And it's like their cars are like,
a lot of it was the fact that their whole goal with the LS400 was that they were attacking the Germans. They were like, we need to build it. Not literally.
Japan was attacking the Germans.
They just saw what Germany was doing with their luxury sedans. They're like, fuck, we can do this. Honestly, I think we could do it better.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did. They literally designed a car, did all of the testing and R&D in Germany, like on the Autobahn. They designed the LS400.
Didn't they do a lot of the R&D in the United States? I literally saw a 20-minute video about this.
But a lot of the R&D for like making that car drive really smooth at high speeds was done in Germany. They disguised them as Camrys back in the early 90s or whatever. The LS400s, before they were a thing, they just disguised them and drove them around the Autobahn in Germany and made sure that car could comfortably cruise at 150 mile an hour.
Yeah.
And that's why, all the ads and commercials back in the day were like the wine glasses stacked up on the motor. Because even now, my car has no exhaust on it. I bet I could stack a wine glass on it and you wouldn't even fucking see that shit vibrating. I mean, you might, because it's kind of a piece of shit now, but... That's my own doing. Those cars are so good. If that exhaust
can vibrate my floor when I'm sitting over top of it, I think.
That's a fair point. But that is all of my own doing. If the car was bone stock, I have no doubt it would be the smoothest thing. Well,
I'll just be playing Rocket League and not hearing anything through my headphones, and then all of a sudden my feet are just like... I'm like, oh, okay, it's leaving.
I want to know if you guys agree with me. You're probably going to. Never mind. You're both going to. But now I've just started saying it. So I'm going to finish saying it. Like,
I disagree.
Japanese luxury cars just feel so much better. The inside of the car feels so much more ergonomic and like welcoming and stuff. And it's just like, that's my one thing about Mercedes and BMW. The interiors just feel like they design them to look pretty, not to like be comfortable.
That's what I was going to say is I think that the luxury cars from the European market of that time, they look a lot more luxurious. Like if you look at a picture side by side of like an LS 400 interior and a Mercedes at the same period, the Mercedes looks more luxurious. But which one actually functions better and which one lasts the test of time? The Toyota, every single time. And I mean, it depends on how you measure luxury, whether you want it to look good and be that like status symbol compared to whether you want it to actually function over 30 years and still be a luxury car 30 years later. I mean, that's really, you know, that's personal opinion. But for me, the Toyotas always win. They really do. And even going into the early 2000s, I still think that even all Japanese automakers, I think Nissan was still putting out really, really good cars.
Hot fire.
Huh?
Hot fire.
They were putting out hot fire?
Yeah, they were. The Y33 is an absolutely great car even to this day. They're super reliable. They look really, really good. I think they look better than UCF20s. I've always thought that.
You're talking about Y33s?
Yeah, but UCF20s are just better cars, unfortunately. Sorry, Nissan. But yeah, I think that generation from like 95 through to about 2005, I think that they made some of the best luxury cars ever. And I don't think anything nowadays competes, because if you do try to compare it to something like, say, like the newer model Lexuses, right? The LS460, and I'm only going to say this because I've done like enough research into it because I really wanted to buy one. They have so many recalls. They have so many electrical issues, and so much of the car is based on electrical stuff that, like, if there is something that goes wrong, it's just not the same. You know, one UZ is relatively simple. And I think after that, when things got a little bit more like advanced with technology, that there's more and more issues that pop up, and that's the whole industry. That's not just luxury cars, but it's more prominent in luxury cars because they have so many like electric aids.
I think a lot of it too is like with the LS400 specifically, how you're saying how it was like an answer to German luxury cars in that era. It was an answer. It was a fight back.
Right.
And nowadays, I feel like with some of the modern cars, with some like the LS460 or maybe even that.
The LS500's the.
Yeah,
the
I haven't been inside of one, but like to me, those cars share so much more similarities with modern German luxury cars.
I agree.
Like they were, it lost that that fight. It not necessarily lost that
it
fight.
Lost they its lost lane.
They're all, they they're lost all, the desire it all, it, to it fight. Almost kind of plateaued. Like if I was in the market for a brand new luxury sedan now, I mean, you got to think, you got your Korean Arta, you got your G90, you've got your Mercedes S-Class, you get BMW 7 Series. Infinite. Audi has the A8, which not many people talk about A8s, which is interesting.
Yeah. The A8L is cool too.
Yeah. And then you've got your LS500. Does Nissan really make anything now that's even in
I would say the well
I don't even
I haven't know. Even updated myself
I don't even
with
know
their
that
it,
Nissan really has like a
no, they just make 16 different versions of the Nissan Rogue and call it different names. The Kicks is just a smaller Rogue.
Last I checked for Infiniti, and this was the last I checked, which was a good while ago, I haven't even once I stopped working there, I wasn't really keeping up with it, but like the Q70. They had a Q70L, which is like...
That's probably the closest thing.
And I personally love those cars.
No, they're nice cars,
they're
but my point of listing...
The same
my point of listing thing. All of those is I don't think that any one of them is a standout car anymore. Mm-hmm. Like if you went through the list of Mercedes, Audi, BMW, Lexus, just any of the offerings, even the Q90, I don't know that any of them are a standout.
I would argue that in my opinion... The LS500 and the Genesis are standout.
They're standouts because they're beautiful cars.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say for
me... Well, and I'm more likely to buy them because I'm brand loyal to Toyota at this point because I trust their products. Like,
yeah,
I know
but
that they can...
Even still, it's kind of like, I think... Here's... In regards to those two cars, I think they are ahead of the game as far as where luxury taste... will viably go. Does that make sense? Like Mercedes and BMW, I mean, they look good and everything, but for me, it's still a continuation of what they've been doing. Yeah. Like too close.
Whereas, I think the newer S-Classes to me are very good looking. I've always liked S-Classes, and now if they're a lot more reliable than they used to be, that would be a more appealing option to me. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I have against the Lexus now is that it looks too sporty. It's like it looks too much like it is
a little unsettling.
The fact that you could look at any Lexus and somebody would send you a text message and be like, "Oh, you have a car just like this," and it's an ES that's probably $50,000 cheaper than yours.
That is true.
If you spent like over $100,000 on a car and somebody then compares it to a car half its value,
that is very true. That would be really. But then upsetting.
Again, same thing can be said for Mercedes because they keep that same design language.
Right.
The Q90, on the other hand. Is it Q90?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Korean.
Or no, hold on. Is it? It's a G90.
G90. Sorry. I don't want to say Q. G90. Yeah. That, on the other hand, that's kind of a standout.
That's in its own lane.
I don't know that you could compare that to even the G70 because it's clearly a lot bigger. The wheels are very different. And the styling is, it's still obvious that it's from that brand, but it's like, it's a little different. It stands on its own.
I think the only real comparable car to the G90 right now is, surprisingly enough, a Lincoln Continental. One of the newer ones.
I don't disagree with you.
No, one of the newer ones. It has to be the one with the fucking
it's not a suicide door. What is it?
I don't know.
It's like a coach door or something where it's like the front door, the handle's in the normal place, and the back door, and you can open it like that. Yeah. What is that? What is that called?
Well, if they open the opposite way, it's a suicide door.
Okay. Well, when they have a suicide door, like, it's pretty cool.
You know they don't actually have that, right? The production ones.
Do they have it in concert or something? Because I've literally seen one.
There's like a few, I think, that you could buy that had like the suicide doors. I think they come standard like that.
I think the new Lincoln Continentals. I want to look this up.
You know, I have 100% seen one in real life next to me at a stoplight.
I agree. The Lincoln Continentals are really cool, but they flopped. You can buy one for like $15,000 to $20,000 now.
I'm talking more about side profiles.
Yeah, okay. The style. They're very good looking car for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like very low roof line, long.
Their mistake was that it's front wheel
headlights
drive.
And taillights. What the fuck?
It's front wheel drive.
What is the point?
You want me to come way out of left field?
What?
The last generation of Acura RLX with special handling all wheel drive. Have you seen it?
Is it a big body car?
As big body as Acura can get.
I mean, that would be cool as shit.
But it is more sporty, but it's Acura, so they're not ever going to completely let go of being sporty.
Yeah.
But when I look, I mean, it's just, not to mention the fact that they didn't sell very many, and I guess they sold a lot of them to people that actually give a shit about their investment, so they keep it really clean all the time. But I remember they had those when I was working there, when I was selling cars over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had one in the showroom, and probably every day I would just find myself for like 30 seconds, just like walking around the car, looking at different things.
Yeah.
The interior was just like ridiculous. I mean, it was super simple. I'll give you that. I'm not going to act like it was like this really spoken for executive thing, but it was just like, it was fucking comfortable. Everything was the size that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they're really cool. I would drive the fuck out of one of those.
Anyway, going back to, you know, 95 to like 2005 being the golden era for me with Japanese luxury cars, I really don't think that there's anything after that time period that was made and was as reliable as those cars were at all. Like I would tend to agree. And anything that aged as well as those did too. Because even like the LS430s were super nice cars. But then again, the Toyota Century, the GZG50 started in 97 and literally ran until I think 2017.
Yeah, they keep those the exact for
same. The motor stayed the same. The transmission was the same 4-speed they were using in the 90s. They literally kept it the same. That's how good they are. They were just like, well, don't fix it. Don't change it. Right. That car is perfect. And then they came out with the new one in like 2017, 2018 or whatever, which I don't think is anywhere near as cool. I get the appeal. It's still a Century. It's still a $200,000 car or whatever. But the GZG50, the fact that from 97 all the way through till basically 20 years later is like the same exact car that you could buy and is the pinnacle Japanese car. Like, it's the top tier Japanese car you could ever buy is one of the coolest fucking things ever. That's a dream car for me to own. It's a GZG50.
Yeah.
This is just a random side note that's off topic, but can we talk about how, we don't have to talk about it, it's more rhetorical. Can we talk about how disappointing and also on the nose it is that the Toyota Crown is coming back and also coming to the US
in SUV form.
As a fucking SUV.
Sorry. I kind of saw it coming.
I mean, that's the unfortunate part. It's so disappointing and on the nose. It's just like they're going to take this very highly renowned name, the Toyota Crown, which is very fitting. The fact that it's named Toyota Crown and it's like a really like flagship car. And they're going to throw it on a fucking SUV.
Yeah, because that's how they're going to sell it. They're going to be like, oh, well, we've been making the Crown for 60 years, so you guys should buy it because it's really special, except it's literally, it's just like an SUV that they threw together and then put that name on it.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say.
Which is bullshit.
The only, the one and only way that I would accept that and be okay with it is if they could do the Japanese version of how the fucking Genesis SUV makes you feel.
That thing's really cool.
So that's what I'm saying.
Like, so out of the box, and like,
if Toyota could like make an SUV that felt like that and called it a Crown, I would be okay.
Yeah,
I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like that that happened. Yeah. But I would at least like keep the lineage to whatever degree that you can.
But I, at the same time, I kind of get why they made that move. Although I'm annoyed that they use that name.
Oh, it's the SUV market all over again.
If they're going to bring a new sedan over here, where exactly does a Crown fit in? We already have it. Like, it would eat into sales of Lexus, which already doesn't sell very well. And then Toyota doesn't really have a demand for a bigger sedan. Right. And they already have a Camry. They already have a Corolla. Avalon, like, these are already things that
the boxes are
but
ticked,
also
on that an SUV. What SUV is there? There's a RAV4. That's Toyota.
They have a ton.
RAV4, Highlander.
They have the Corolla Cross now.
I forgot about that.
I mean, the Crown doesn't really need that's.
I'm assuming it's going
to
be a big.
They don't need it. They don't
Crown
need
didn't
to bring
need
it
to
here.
Come over here.
No, that's but I assume it's going to be probably a big SUV. Like, it's like,
I got. Because
they don't
I hope know. Not. Fuck, that would make it even worse. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. The only
at
reason,
least make it like crossover size or a small.
The
SUV.
Only reason. Or the only situation where I would be like, okay, yeah, that's pretty cool, is if they made the Toyota version of like
that
fucking Genesis SUV. Because you
that's
look
a big,
at that size.
That's a big SUV.
It's bigger. It's not a
big
huge one.
Big-ish, but the roofline is low.
When I think big really SUV, good. I think like Escalade or Excursion or something like that. Like, that's
well,
what
Excursion
I think
is separate because that's a truck.
You know,
though.
Yeah.
But it's like when I look at that thing, that's
I'd
what's
say
so
that's
cool
the same
about
size
it.
Is an Escalade?
No.
No.
You don't
no,
think that's in the same?
Have you seen one of the new Escalades, dude?
Those things are monstrous.
I'm 6'2" and the headlights like come up to my eyes.
Those things
well,
are
that's just because that's how
huge.
American cars are styled.
No, they're just really? Big. They're
no,
just big.
So
we need
cars.
To go look at one of those fucking Genesis SUVs.
They're like,
because I need to pay attention.
They're
to
like, fuck it, fuck. Like,
I mean, they're not small.
Older, yeah, they're like older Honda Pilot sized. Basically, that's a really weird takeaway, but
yeah,
that's
like
what
early
size 2000s
Honda Pilot.
I'm gonna take that with a grain of salt. I want to look at one.
Okay,
I want to see it.
But the point that I'm making is, it's like, if you don't know any better, you can look at that and be like, oh, is that like a Bentley level SUV? Because the way that it looks, and it looks really elegant, and it's nice, and it looks really good. Granted, if they're bringing it the Crown, it's going to be a Toyota. So they're probably not going to do what I'm saying, but it would be really nice if they had to bring the name over here.
They make it
that
like
they
a,
would kind
a,
of keep it
status
this elegant,
type thing.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That
so,
would be
but,
that would be good. But then again, is there a market for it?
Yeah, they don't. They, you know, they don't listen to.
Yeah,
they don't listen to the podcast guys anymore.
I know.
Yeah, OEMs listen to this podcast.
Hey, exactly. We'll tell you how to Toyota. I'm gonna email this podcast to Toyota.
Email this podcast to Toyota. They'll send it straight to
You know how like other countries will sometimes literally still produce cars? Like, you know how in Mexico you can buy like a brand, I don't know if it's still a thing, but you can still buy
they
like
stopped
brand
in
new
like
Volkswagens.
2017 or something.
Yeah, you could buy like a brand new Bug or whatever.
Yeah.
Dude,
well,
imagine
like
if there was
an
like,
old Beetle,
yeah,
brand new.
If you if they still produce the LS400 somewhere, oh my god. Oh my god!
Liam's moving to a small town in Portugal where they're still fucking.
That would be incredible. I mean, I would fully just like buy and import them to the US. I mean, you got to wait for the 25 year, but that would.
I was gonna say that's That sounds
Oh, wait, no, you can't do the 25. That sounds like one of those business schemes that
sounds great on paper, this is but then you get into it and you're like, what have I done?
You just can't do
it. Well, what about, like, me and Victoria were talking about this earlier because she asked me, she was like, does Russia have any, like, OEM manufacturers?
Yeah.
And I was like, Lada.
Lada.
Lada. Because they've just made the same car for like for a million years. And like now there's like a modernized version of it. I'm pretty sure it's been continually getting more, you know, keeping up with the times.
It's like Porsche. If it ain't broken, don't fix it.
It's straight up.
Porsche actually made good cars.
It's a boxy four-door sedan that will get you from point A to point B. And
you can drive through three brick walls and still make it to your destination.
That's also
true.
You know
what's amazing is that Russians still drive cars from the fucking 70s that are brand new, like, but every single one of them has dash cams in them and people here still don't. Isn't that wild? Well, they can still be driving those cars, but they have dash cams.
There's a more like cultural necessity to do that in Russia because so many people are trying to defraud everybody else.
There fucking should be here too.
That's true.
There should be here, but because people are fucking stupid, not because people are trying to extort you by getting hit by your car. But I see what you're saying.
That's debatable. I feel like I've seen some people try to cause accidents.
I feel like it should definitely, if not a legal obligation, it should definitely be included in cars by now.
What, dash cams? Have
a fucking dash
cam. A lot of them aren't. There's a lot of cars that are coming out with like some sort of camera that will record. Like,
it would never pass here.
Tesla's
no, but like some new trucks, like Toyota trucks, I think have some cameras and stuff.
They have cameras.
Is it a dash cam or is it like a camera like the EyeSight on Subarus where it's not used as a dash cam?
Here's the thing. Like, it would never pass ATSB here because people would be like, it's against my First Amendment, right? They're like, invading my
privacy.
Yeah, like you don't have a phone that has fucking four cameras on it right now.
You don't have a driver's license, a social security.
That's the final straw. That is the
I don't want the government putting a camera in my car.
They watch and listen to every part of your life and them putting a dash cam in there is the final straw.
Like your phone already listens to you and the people around you and gives you personalized ads around that. Like they already know.
You do realize if you have a dash cam, you can still do illegal shit. It's up to you whether you fuck it. People see that footage.
You can literally. I'm about to lean right into it. I'm not gonna let myself do it.
We're gonna get on our soapbox. We cannot.
What were you gonna? Something about Russia? We started talking about Ladas.
Because he was talking about the Beatles.
Being able to buy production cars.
Lada has just made the same car for 70 years.
Yeah.
I mean, 70? Yes. That seems like way
No, more. It's that was well, like a 1950. Soviet. That was like a Soviet.
I suppose that makes sense.
1950 was 70 years ago.
That is wild. Imagine buying a brand new one and just bringing it over here. That'd be kind of hard.
You should talk to a guy. What's his name? I think his name's John Ludwig. I think he did that.
Who is that?
Johnny Boy.
I think. It's John Ludwig.
Yeah.
John, if you ever hear this, I have no idea if you will. I'm obviously kidding.
Yes.
I really enjoyed your Lada, for the record.
Yeah, I went and showed it to Victoria after we talked about it, and she was like, that's really cool.
It was a really neat car. Do you know the car that we're talking about?
Yeah, of course I know the car.
Okay. Epsilons and all stuff. Yeah. It's so cool.
It's no, I was
cool.
Just laughing at a funny memory that I had with that, too, was where it was after Riverside, the year that it got canceled, and my girlfriend at the time, we met up with a couple other guys. John was there. Mason was there at Clumpy's in North Shore. And we were just chatting outside or whatever. We got onto the topic of talking about like Russia and Russian cars and stuff like that. And like,
my
girlfriend at the time was talking shit about how like the Slav squat looks really stupid having your heels on the floor. She's like, you look fucking stupid doing that, blah, 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 blah.
Jealous.
Well, get fucked.
Jealous.
And John was saying, well, you know, it can't, like, I know more about this because I have a lot of, like, I've been involved with that culture or whatever. And she got like really offended by that. She was like, I don't like that guy because he said this about this. And I was like, shut the fuck up.
He stood up for himself and what he likes.
He's
a piece of shit, huh?
I think he talked a fact on culture over there and she didn't like it because it looked stupid. So
he mansplained it. You mean he talked with excitement about one of his interests?
Dude.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But
anyway, to give context, I'm saying good things about John. My ex-girlfriend was awful, so
Sean is great. We are very much like, it's very cool to have him
we're
in
all,
town.
We're all good buddies. He moved here to Chattanooga.
Same time I did. Now, right? Yeah, same time that we moved into here was around that time.
Just about a year ago.
But so.
Did you have anything else to add on your?
We're getting close to 2 hours, so I was thinking about summarizing. Honestly, Matt, you seem like you got somewhere to go right now.
I got something. Just it's brewing. Hold on. That is the worst. It's the worst thing you could have possibly done.
Wait, what fucking song are you singing?
I'm singing.
He's singing the serial murderer watching you from your back window.
I'm singing
song.
If the person who wrote the Jeopardy song didn't know how to write music.
Keep going. So when someone plays the flute and just misses one of the fucking chords,
just random clap in the middle.
I don't know. I lost it, I guess.
All right. Well, in summary, we will have very different ideas of when the golden era is. And honestly, I'd be pretty curious to hear from you guys what your opinion is on the golden era for cars, both in, you know, the aftermarket community.
And also, I would love it if somebody would ruthlessly fact check everything that I said in this episode, because I feel like I said a lot of things that are not true.
Yeah. I mean, usually we just kind of pick a topic and then see where it goes. And we'd love hearing from you guys. And if we're wrong on stuff, please do correct us. But
yeah. And a great place to go chime in and give us your opinion on it is
Wheel Price.
The Substance Discord.
Yes. So if you're not part of that, you should be. I'm not as active as I would like to be, but that's just because I...
Damn, story of our life. Fuck.
Yeah. But I try to be.
It is a cool place. Like, we can definitely dive into a lot of these things because it is set up in a way where we have all the different subcultures. Like, if there's one of those subcultures in there that you feel is the golden era of cars for you, go in there and talk about it. Or even on the episodes tab, talk a little bit about this episode and share some of your...
Episodes channel.
Episodes channel. Call them tabs.
Come on, man. Get it together.
Boomer.
Dude.
I mean, so weird. Matt's so stoked to have anything over me because he it's so funny because we all call Matt the boomer, and whenever he gets a moment where he's like ahead of anybody in something.
Yeah, that's right. I'm hip to the scene.
I called him a millennial yesterday because me and Benny were doing something and Matt was on his phone and I was like, fucking millennials, dude. And I was like, it's just funny because we always call Matt the boomer.
Dude, I feel like I've talked about this on an episode before. Like, it's so weird because I feel like legitimately at this point, I feel like part of the reason is that A, I don't have TikTok. So I'm not moving with the stream of time that everybody else is moving with.
But you also watch Reels.
Yeah, that makes it worse. That makes it even worse.
Hey, he enjoys
the awareness is there.
He literally enjoys TikTok without the good algorithm.
No, but see, here's the thing, right? It's a self-control thing. Like, I know Instagram fucking derails my time as much as it does, TikTok is just going to do that times like 20.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
And like, I got shit. I'm pretty condensed to begin with. So
but
it's
if
like,
you guys are going to indulge in some TikTok, you know who you should follow? Wheel Price. They make some sick ass videos on that.
They got Peter Stuppard, who
his was pretty good.
His was good.
Holy shit. That's Pete's last name?
Stuppard?
Yeah. I did not. That guy may as well had a last name.
His last name is Pete.
Yeah, Speedy Pete. It's first and last name.
No. His legal name is Rapidly Accelerating Peter.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
Really, it says it on his driver's license.
Really big, fast Peter.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode.
I hope you've liked the energy in this episode as much as we have.
Do you guys still do your shout-outs at the end? Do you kind of give that up?
We haven't. We should. And I did notice another podcast that I've shouted out on here before, the Late Night Motor Club, hosted by my good friend Alex. They actually do like shout-outs at the end. I don't remember what it is. It's like their cool out of the week, except they've been chopping them up into Instagram clips, and I'm kind of mad at myself that we weren't doing this. But they're literally like, oh yeah, my cool out of the week is so and so with this car, and then like the TikTok clip is them saying that, and then it's a bunch of clips or pictures of that car. I'm like, fuck, why didn't we think of this? So
damn, what have you done?
Hats off to you guys for getting ahead of us on that.
No, that's they're doing great.
Yeah, it's a cool podcast. You guys should go go check it out. If you enjoy this podcast and you want something that's a little bit shorter and probably more fun, go listen to them.
More fun? More Why would fun? You say that?
I mean, there's a little bit more lighthearted than ours.
If you want to go listen to a podcast that's more enjoyable to listen to, why don't you head on over there?
Hey, at this point, if you're 2 hours into this episode, I assume you're actually a fan, so I know you're not just going to leave us.
Facts. This shit sucks, dude. Go somewhere else.
We're going to keep doing this because we get our rocks off doing this. You don't really have to listen anymore if you don't want to.
And that's called being a white man in America right now.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please go give this 5 stars. We don't know what it does right now, but eventually it will fucking mean something.
It makes us feel good.
Yeah, it's like when, you know, you do something good at school and the fucking kid, the teacher gives you a
gold star.
Nah, the teacher gives you a gold star sticker that says "well done" or "you're a cunt" or something. And that's a good feeling, and that's what we need from you guys. Give us 5 stars so we can fill out some good cunts. And if you're on YouTube, like it, subscribe.
Fill up some good cunts.
What? No, feel like feel some like good cunts.
Oh my god!
Damn, that would be. Well, it's been said now.
Give us 5 stars so we... Yeah.
You can't finish it. That is
not what I was
saying. Fill her up.
Fill us to the brim, please.
So, Ben's fired.
Setting this mic down. It's far away from me now.
That's what we need from you guys. Dudes, we need to be filled to the brim.
It's... Whoa. Hey, slow it down. Hey, so just for shits and giggles, tell us how you feel about our new studio, about our new...
Yeah, I mean,
our new chill setup we got going on.
I like
on here.
It. I need to be sitting more comfortably because my back's killing me from how bad my posture is.
What's funny is I made a full like 180 degree change because I don't know if you noticed when we started, I was like fucking.
You were
like,
sitting back,
I was
relaxing.
Like planking on this couch.
You were bing chilling.
Yeah. But by the end of the episode, I'm like,
I'm in the same spot and I'm in pain. So yeah, we'll figure it out.
I'm in pain.
But no, it definitely is nicer because we have the fan and we have AC. It's a little bit more of a hassle to set up. But if you guys like this, we will definitely do this just because it's
easier.
It's more copable for us to sit here and fucking talk. It's real unbearable in the garage right now, especially if any of you guys are living in the South. It's like this week, especially, it's going to be like over 100 degrees every day.
Space.
We do have more space.
We can flail while we're talking and it doesn't matter. Somebody is screen capping the last 5 seconds of this podcast.
Oh my god. All right, guys. Thank you so much. We will see you next week for another episode.
Thanks, you'll hear us. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.